We begin, though, with a closer look at the bad chemistry that's got the Middle East and much of the world on high alert right now, Saudi Arabia and Iran, two nations that also claim religious leadership roles, Saudi Arabia for Sunni Muslims, Iran for Shiite Muslims. Relations between the two were already tense. Then this weekend, Saudi Arabia executed 47 people, including a prominent Shiite cleric. Next, the Saudi embassy in Iran was attacked by protesters there, and the Saudis decided to sever diplomatic relations with Iran. For the Saudi View, we turn to Fahad Nazer, formerly with the Saudi embassy in the U.S. He's now an analyst with the Arab Gulf States Institute in Washington, which is funded by Saudi Arabia, and a think tank in Abu Dhabi.
From the Saudi perspective, the people who were executed on Saturday were essentially the worst of the worst. They were tried and convicted of some very serious terrorist attacks, in which about 100 people have been killed. Some of these attacks go back to 2003. They basically targeted Saudis, both civilians as well as security personnel, but also some Brits and Americans. They had already gone through several appeals processes and exhausted basically all the legal measures within the legal system. And 2015, I think, was an especially brutal year in Saudi Arabia in terms of the terrorist attacks that took place. Those were mostly inspired by ISIS. The ISIS sympathizers and affiliates in some ways pose a serious challenge, I think, to Saudi security. And so in the way I'm reading it, these executions were a message to Saudi Arabia's own militants, whether they're Sunni or Shiites, that going forward, Saudi Arabia will have a zero-tolerance policy. You cannot conduct violent attacks against Saudis or non-Saudis, no matter what your grievances are.
So if you believe the bloodiest attacks of 2015 were because of ISIS, why go after Shia activists? I mean, the cleric Nimr al-Nimr always claimed he fought a war of words, not a war of violence.
Well, at the very least, I think one has to realize or admit that he was considered a firebrand, at the very least. His sermons were very fiery and in some ways, on multiple occasions, he essentially called for the overthrow of the Saudi government. I don't think he was implying that that should be done peacefully. And in terms of the actual crimes that he was charged with, it was certainly not for his activism, as is portrayed sometimes in the Western media, that the Saudi government accused him of actually taking part in a terrorist cell and in fomenting sedition and in causing people to actually carry out actual attacks. And they held him personally responsible for some of the attacks in which security personnel were killed. And incidentally, there was another person by the name of Faras al-Shuwail, who was a Sunni militant, who was also executed on Saturday. And he, too, was considered as an ideologue who incited people to violence. And he and Nimr were essentially held personally responsible for some of the deaths that took place.
You know, Shiite protesters have taken to the streets from Bahrain to Pakistan. The Saudi embassy in Iran came under attack. Thousands of protesters today in Baghdad. Do you think the Saudis kind of knew what was going to be the response to these executions?
That's hard to tell. I mean, again, I think the primary message here was towards its own, you know, Sunni and Shia militants within Saudi Arabia. I suspect that they anticipated that there would be some sort of reaction. But in the press conference that was held yesterday in Riyadh by the Saudi foreign minister, he made it very clear that the statements that came from specifically from Iran, from its top religious and political leaders, were unacceptable and were tantamount to unacceptable interference in the domestic policies of Saudi Arabia. And he also said that they let American officials understand that, as far as they're concerned, the judiciary in Saudi Arabia is an independent institution and that they reject any outside criticism questioning the judiciary's decisions.
That was the Saudi View from Fahad Nazer, formerly with the Saudi embassy in Washington. As he mentioned, to the Saudis, this Shiite cleric who was executed was the worst of the worst. But my colleague with BBC Persian, Majid Afshar, says that's not how some hardliners in Iran see it. You see, Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr had close ties with Iran, even studied there for a couple of years. And the view from Tehran is that, Majid Afshar says, he was unjustly targeted.
The Iranian line is that this man was just a political prisoner. He had his ideas and he was never involved in terrorist acts. As human rights groups have said, this man, Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr, never received a fair trial. And Saudi Arabia failed to provide a substantive evidence on what specifically this sheikh has been accused of. They just confined it to accusations of being related to terror acts.
Following these executions in Saudi Arabia, there were protests around the globe and an attack on the Saudi mission in Tehran. What has been the reaction from the Iranian government about that attack?
When the gatherings happened outside the Saudi embassy in Tehran and also the consulate in Mashhad in northeast of Iran, no one thought that it could get so ugly and these people would be allowed to enter the embassy. And the government, I think, in the very beginning, didn't take it as seriously as they should have. We know that the Iranian government is now quite unhappy. Even the most conservative elements and groups inside Iran have now condemned the ransacking of the embassy, and they say they're not happy about Saudi Arabia's reaction to this, which they called hasty and uncalculated.
You mean severing diplomatic ties with Tehran?
Severing diplomatic ties, exactly, yes.
What have you been hearing from everyday Iranians? How do they feel about the fallout between Iran and Saudi Arabia? Do they support the actions of those hardliners who attacked the Saudi mission? I mean, where are their heads at?
We've been having quite mixed reactions to this. You know that differences between Saudi Arabia and Iran, these are historical differences. And some people were quite happy. We've got some comments on our website and on our Facebook page. There are people who say they're so happy that Iranian people would not have to go to Hajj anymore because they think that with severing of ties would lead to the Iranian side not sending pilgrims to Saudi Arabia, and they're happy about that. But at the same time, we are getting loads of comments saying the cutting off of diplomatic ties between Iran and Saudi Arabia would somehow empower groups, extremist groups like ISIS in the region.
Now, you mentioned the Iranians who say fine with severed diplomatic relations. They don't have to go to the Hajj anymore in Saudi Arabia, Mecca and Medina being those destinations. I mean, there were a couple of hundred Iranians who died in the Hajj stampede back in September. And yes, it was an accident. Yes, Iranians were deeply upset, but it didn't cause a reaction as big as this one. Why do you think that is?
With the death of Iranian pilgrims in Saudi Arabia, the reactions of Iranian authorities and the Iranian leader, although it was quite negative and it was quite strong, but still the Iranian leader did not come out and talk about vengeance. But with this one, the Iranian leader said that there would be a divine vengeance on the death of or execution of Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr. And that gave the conservatives and the hardliners in Iran an excuse to gather outside the embassies. And then they took pictures of themselves and posted it online and put it online, apparently thinking that they will be rewarded for this. But now we are hearing the Iranian police saying that they have arrested 50 of those people who attacked the embassy. And now we're seeing the Iranian government, especially President Rouhani, who now sees his government being undermined by the conservatives, coming out and condemning the attacks as uncalculated and wrong.
Majid Afshar with the BBC's Persian service there speaking with us from London. The deep rift between Iran and Saudi Arabia includes religion as well as politics. Vali Nasser has been writing about this for much of his career. He's currently dean of the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies in Washington.
Iran is a predominantly Shia country, which is a sect of Islam that is different from the one that is followed by the majority of Muslims who are Sunnis. And Saudi Arabia is a predominantly Sunni country. So each of them see themselves as the protector and spokesman of these two sects of Islam. And in that capacity, also see themselves as rivals for leadership in the Islamic world.
So briefly, what is the difference between the Sunni version of Islam and the Shia version? And those differences, I know, they go back to like 632 AD after the death of the Prophet Muhammad. Do we have to go back that far to understand the split?
Well, historically, yes. But in reality, this is like a divide between Protestants and Catholics in Christianity. The origins are very old in history, but they also are about modern day political identity. And in a region of the world where religion matters enormously, then what form of religion do you follow becomes very important. So in some ways, Shia and Sunni today operate as a sort of a proxy for ethnic identity. It defines who you are. Are you part of majority? Are you part of minority in a country? And therefore, this is a theological difference, but one which has a great deal of contemporary political relevance.
Yeah, let's talk about how great a deal it has. Most Muslim countries in the world, our listeners should know, are Sunni. Iran and Iraq are two of the notable exceptions. What role does religion play in this Cold War between Shiite Iran and Sunni Saudi Arabia? And how do the rulers play out the differences?
Well, first of all, it's true that the Shiites are an absolute minority in the larger Muslim world. But in the heart of the Middle East, where the current crises are unfolding, the numbers are much closer to one another. Mm. And we've gone since the American invasion of Iraq, which handed over a previously Sunni ruling regime, Sunni ruling country to the Shias, what we've had in the region is a gradual shift of power away from Sunnis in the direction of the Shias. And this has proven to be a very turbulent process. So countries like Saudi Arabia and many Sunnis on the ground feel that Iran is rising. Iraq is now Shia. There is restlessness among Shias in Bahrain or in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. And they have a sense of siege, and they're reacting to that.
Vali Nasser, you studied this for decades. Where do you see all of this heading, especially with these executions?
Well, I think now we have a major rupture in the region, which is that the Saudis have ended diplomatic relations with Iran and have encouraged many of their allies to do so. That would make it much more difficult to have a region-wide solution to Syria, to Iraq, to ISIS, to Yemen. So we're in for a period of a greater freeze in what was already an ongoing Cold War. It will require a lot of effort on the part of the U.S. and its European allies to lean on both sides. And this also includes the Russians and the Chinese, who also have a stake in the Middle East as well, to get the two sides to go back at least to where they were before the executions, and then basically lean on them that they would not take any more provocative actions of the kind that we saw over the weekend.
Are there activists who seek a unification of Shia and Sunni Islam, and do they even matter if governments
no, I don't think
want
they
to
matter.
Use...
This is not an ecumenical problem. You have two governments that are engaged in a very classic realpolitik. If you really want to understand the Middle East, you don't need to go 1,400 years back to understand Shia-Sunni divide. You can look at the history of Franco-German rivalry in Europe or English-French rivalry in Europe. You have two great powers in the region that want to achieve dominance. And sectarianism is a very powerful tool in getting legitimacy for their quest for power.
Vali Nasser at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies in Washington. Thank you, as always.
Thank you.